how can we keep our dairy sustainable in the long run. So you can get some advantage by not having those practices right now, but if you don't start right now, maybe your future generation is not going to see or is not going to have the chance that you are having right now.
A whole new era of communication in the dairy industry is coming. Now you have the brightest minds of the global dairy industry right in your pocket. And what's best, you can listen to all of them while driving to a farm, traveling, or running errands. It's never been this good, and it's never been this simple.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face.
SmaxTech. Get insights from inside your cows with SmaxTech for higher herd health and profitability. R Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach.
Welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show, a weekly podcast where you'll find cutting-edge insights and everything that's working in the global dairy industry.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show. This is Mark Thomas from Dairy Health, and this afternoon we're connecting with Kynan Florentino from the University of Minnesota. Good afternoon, Kynan. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mark. Thanks for having me. I'm good.
Oh, you're welcome. How about you? Very well. Very well, thanks. Just got back from 2 weeks working with clients in China. First trip there since November 2019, so it was good to see some clients from the past and current clients and meet some new folks too. So looking forward to the holidays here back in North America.
Yeah, well, that's good that you have a good and safe travel and you are back to spend the holidays with your family.
So we had a few minutes to catch up before this recording. Actually, interestingly, we collaborate with University of Minnesota, Kynan's advisor, Luciano Cachetta. And with that, we collaborate directly with Kynan and some of the collaborative research projects we have. So a great opportunity to visit about some of those projects and even the things that you're doing outside of those collaborations. So why don't we start with give the audience a bit of a background of you're from Brazil originally and your training and studies and how you made it to the University of Minnesota.
Sure. Yeah, so my name is Kynan Florentino. I'm originally from Brazil. I had my DVM training in Londrina State University in Brazil. I came to University of Minnesota in 2019 under the supervision of Dr. Luciano Cachetta. And since then, we have been working numerous different projects, always around the transition period and how can we make this transition and this period in the data call better for our animals.
Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of Smartamine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain their lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
Excellent. So are you from a dairy background in Brazil? You have your DVM. So did you work in Brazil as a veterinarian before coming to the U.S.?
Yeah, well, curious not. I did work for a little bit in a slaughterhouse once I graduated. So I graduated in 2018, worked for a year in a slaughterhouse with beef. But I have not other background. My family always, we had beef and horse. But then when the opportunity came to work with Luciano and start new research and new work with dairy, I accept. And so since 2019, I have been work with Dr. Luciano.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know, some of the most noted advisors, researchers, experts in dairy, some of those grew up in inner city regions. So I always say it doesn't really matter what your background is. It's how you got there. And many times that's some unique experiences to allow us to think outside of the box a bit. So with that, let's move on. You're doing a lot of your work with rumination sensors, technology. Certainly those are the buzzwords that lots of people are thinking about these days as we look to use these technologies effectively. So give us a bit of background of some of the projects you're working on now and some of the data you're gathering.
Yeah. So we have been working with data and assessing and analyzing how rumination during the first week postpartum, or how those cows, how their behavior in recovering the rumination after calving could play a role or could serve as an effect modifier between the association of ketosis and milk production. So we are assessing, and the aim is to see if by the rumination time, if our cow recover fast, she can react better for the high BHB levels that she might have in terms of milk production, using milk production as our proxy for healthy measure.
Excellent. And you also mentioned there the I would say a buzzword, but you know, lots of discussion about BHB ketosis, subclinical ketosis. What are some of your research projects showing in terms of, you know, there's even some question by some groups, is ketosis a disease? We know it's a process that's important for the fresh cow, the transition cow, but let's dig into that a little bit, your thoughts and some of your comments on that.
Yeah, sure. I agree when you say that high BHB or ketosis is more a process as the cow goes through. I don't see, and I'm sure in our group, our lab, we don't see it as a disease itself. We see more as a disorder or an imbalance that the cow is going through, or adaptation due to her higher demand for milk production, or like, so she has a higher demand, so she has to go through these adaptations in order to maintain her energy levels.
So given that, what are some of the projects that you're working on to address, you know, how we address ketosis or treat it, for example? Some of the projects we're working on are collaborative, you know, to treat or not treat subclinical ketosis. Some really interesting data coming from that. Why don't we chat a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, the project that we have been collaborated together. So we have a set of cows, which then were randomized among the ketotic cows, randomized to be treated or not. And what we have been seeing so far is that in terms of milk production, the treatment doesn't affect that much. Of course, there are other outcomes that we have to look through and assess that. But in terms of milk production, the first 2-3 months, it hasn't shown any improvement when you treat the animal.
Now, there was some interesting data there, some of the summary that just looked at a few days ago, where rumination had an effect, whether a cow started out with slow rumination or normal rumination. So what do you make out of that data? I mean, it seems to make sense, right? The cows that are potentially ketotic, subclinically ketotic, and ruminating well could be considered a normal process, and they're going to work through that, maybe very much like transient hypocalcemia, right? Those cows are hypocalcemic, no doubt, but they're going to eat and work their way through it and are the highest producing cows. It seems like from this data, really, ketosis would be thought of as very similar, that natural process, the highest producing cows, as long as they can adapt and get through it.
Right, right. Yeah, so we have trial that we did in 2000, or we started in 2020, we have a set of 955 cows from two different farms here in Minnesota. So we gather information about those cows. We measure BHB during the first week, skipping the day of calving, because we know that there is some variation, like some physiological variation the first day that could change or give some error in our results. So we skipped that day, collected and measured the BHB. So we had cows higher than 1.2 as normal, being subclinical hypocalcemia, and otherwise no. And then the way we look at the rumination, we check their slope. So we regress for each cow during the first week. We regress a line for this milk and rumination. And given the slope or what is the effect per day or how fast she recovers per day, we then classify her as a higher, medium, or low rumination. And what we have seen so far is that those cows, as you said, that are ruminating well, and even though they are positive for ketosis, they produce even more than the, I would say, the non-subclinical, not the health cows, but the non-subclinical cows. So they're producing even more in terms of that in the first 3 months. When you look at the low rumination group, the ketotic cows are still producing more, but then the difference was statistically significant.
So in the initial emails of you accepting the invite for the podcast, one of your statements was, I think we should think about letting cows be cows and try to provide the best conditions. We were chatting a little bit about that in the beginning, but you know, in some ways, I think about that saying and statement and think about what can we eliminate from the fresh cow program in terms of, you know, bothering that cow. Let her freshen in and let her get eating. I just mentioned that, you know, drenching every fresh cow is still something that not very common, but still in some herds and groups in China. And again, like these type things that we do to cows that we think is good, but is actually, you know, bothering them. So any comments there?
Yeah. I my comment on that, like sometimes we are over worried about, so we want to lock all the cows and check everyone for BHB, for example, or any other parameter that we might check. But sometimes I think the right thing to do is just let the cows be there and go to check. We have sensors nowadays that can give us alerts, or you can follow the cow phone when they have a drop in rumination or some alert. And then through those alerts, go check the cows that need. And I know farmers that they don't even check for BHB anymore. What they do is if the cow show any other sign of any other disease, or if they check for milk production, that cow has a drop in milk production or anything that could mean that she is in trouble or has any problem, then they would evaluate and see BHB levels and other things that they might want to check.
So in terms of you know, developing those lists for which cows to check, you know, we work quite a bit in that area, the health index or other indexes depending on the system, to not have a list that's overwhelming, you know, lots of cows to check, but also, you know, sensitivity and specificity. So in terms of your work, what are you seeing in terms of how to, you know, fine tune the sensor? Because we have all this data now, obviously milk production, days in milk, and so forth. What are some of your thoughts regarding, you know, creating the best list to not miss a cow, but not have 100 cows locked up in the morning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I would start and think about those cows that it's their first lactation are heard, because so we don't have any history in that animal, so we don't know. Well, we know through genetics what she's supposed to produce or how she's supposed to be, but we don't know any records. We don't have any records in the farm. So I would start checking those first lactation animals. And from there, third lactation grade or greater, I would check only if the animal, like you said, show any decrease on the health index, or if we saw a deviation on the milk or the rumination status or achieved, for example. So sometimes cows that are going through some pain or some clinical signs, they will be less active and you will have a drop in rumination. So I would try to target those cows instead of check everyone in the fresh pen.
Excellent. And I think, you know, as more data comes from groups like yours, we'll really be able to fine tune not only what we do on the farm, but those companies can fine tune their algorithms also to really help find the more specifics of, you know, what disease, giving more diagnostic potential, if you will, because, you know, we still have those cows where, okay, there's an alert, but what does she have? What's wrong with her? Can we find out? Can we make a diagnosis?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, and giving this topic that you are talking about the companies to find the algorithm and target the cows for which disease they are having, we currently too, we are checking rumination prepartum and seeing if we can see earlier, it has early detection for those cows that will develop ketosis in the postpartum and being affected by decreasing milk production or any other signs. And the results so far, I cannot share anything yet because we have really preliminary results, but it's been promising. Like, we haven't seen, what we are doing is checking the prepartum, how the variation prepartum could affect, or if we can find a cutoff point for the variation of prepartum rumination and try to found those cows that will be a problematic cows, if you will, in terms of ketosis and milk production postpartum.
Excellent. And that's certainly the key, obviously prevention, but what can we do if we find those cows earlier, then can we actually intervene in some way to maybe limit or decrease the risk of those diseases that are from the data potentially inevitable or, you know, they've already started, and that cow's going to have a real tough time transitioning. So what would you say, you know, based on this research and you know, what you're doing currently, obviously herds that don't have activity monitoring in place, any idea of the, as you work through this, and I know Luciano is, you know, actively thinking of this, the economic aspect of that. These systems aren't cheap. You know, herds that have good reproductive performance perhaps aren't going to justify the system from a heat detection standpoint. Perhaps they can, but you know, if reproduction is already very good, less of a value there. So any considerations on the value that these systems can bring in detecting these diseases earlier?
Sure. For me, there is value other. Of course, when we talk about achieved, the first thing that came to our mind as practitioners or as a veterinarian or even the as a farmer is for the heat detection. But we have much more value in rumination and activity data that can be useful and can bring us on overall health, because we are dealing with a population health. We're not dealing like for one cow. Of course, it's useful for one animal to check outlier in terms of disease, but we're dealing with the whole farm. So I think rumination activity can give us some insights about what's going on with our animals. And I'm sure from there are other colleagues working with rumination activity data too, so I'm sure the value will come with time, and you'll pay back.
Well, I've said this a few times now on different podcasts, but you know what I think. One thing that's really interesting is I started my career back in 1997 in Northern New York and a wide range of farms, but still smaller farms where there was quite a bit of individual decisions based on a cow, whether she's a bit thin, breed her a bit later, so forth and so on. And as lots of expansion came into place with the lack of some technology or technology that we have today, things really went to herd based, right? Okay, every cow is going to have her first insemination at 65 days in milk, no variation, and so forth and so on. And I think what's really cool in a way is that now with this individualized data, we're kind of going back to the ability, very formalized, procedure, protocol driven, but okay, make decisions about, for instance, reproduction, specific preventative treatments, rations, movement out of the fresh pen or not at so many days in milk on an individual basis. And I find that really interesting. You know, we've kind of gone full circle to, smaller farms that, really individualized, maybe incorrectly, right? Overanalyzed that and, delayed breeding when they shouldn't have. But I think now as we gather some of this data, genomics put into there, and so forth, some of the work from Julio Giordano's lab with Emily Sisko about looking at, genomics and different breeding programs based on reproductive rankings. I think there's, lots of future opportunity to think of the cow as an individual again.
For sure. And even when we think about the animal welfare, which is under topic that people often talk, we have other side project checking the transition between the opposite transition, the transition between being lactating animal to into the dry period, and how can we increase or give them more comfort. And in this case, we're using the acidogenic bolus that I think Luciano have talked to you too, but we are looking now in terms of this transition between lactating and during the dry period, if the activity data and individualized data from that animal can bring us some insights about the welfare aspects of those animals.
Yes, yeah, we actually, there's a podcast here on the Dairy Podcast Show with Luciano on the Bovacalc Dry acidogenic bolus. So for those listeners who, if that piqued your interest, go back a number of podcasts and you can find that discussion about some of that research. And I think that's a really good point also is, what are some things like just dry off there that we maybe don't think it's stressful to the cow, and perhaps it is. Some discussions also out of Lance Baumgard's group of inflammation, and is the inflammation at dry off, just drying off the cow, the inflammation in her udder significant enough to start this cascade of events that lead to inflammatory response and then some metabolic issues 45, 60 days before that cow even freshens.
Yeah, I'm sure. And we have similar thoughts here too. So we think Luciano will always, this is the way he teach me too, to see the transition period. Well, often people define, and the real definition is 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after calving. But we try to see the whole picture of the transition, because we actually have two transitions from lactating to dry, and then from dry to lactating again. And I'm sure there are some problems that starts back then when we just dry the cow and then just forget, well, she's dry now, she's okay. But we might be missing some points there.
I really like that comment, Kynan, the two transitions, right? We often joke that, in some operations or farms, the dry cows are forgotten about or out in the back 40, so to speak, and how important that ration and that time is for them. So, great for our audience to think about, don't forget about those cows either. Preparing them for colostrogenesis and calving, right? Colostrum,
yeah.
Antibody production starts well beyond the transition period and so forth. So those are all things that we can, aspects of the transition that we can affect by welfare, housing, and especially nutrition.
Right. Especially if you think in our modern dairy cows that dry off, they're producing 80 pounds per day. So that's a lot of milk for you just to dry and just forget about those animals, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, with some of these technologies and more of the data, you know, what can we do again to minimize that transition stress, really? Excellent. So future plans for you, when you wrap up the PhD program, what are, you know, long-term research goals and so forth? Is really transition health for the cow or other aspects?
Well, of course, like I would like to focus and everything, but we can't be focused on everything. So yes, my plan is to still keep working into transition period, in the two transitions, like I said, like trying to minimize the dry off and giving allow the cows to have a good rest, and then the other transition. So my goal is to keep working with that. I got married, so my plan is to stay in Minnesota too, if that's a possibility after my PhD program.
Excellent. And I guess let the cow be a cow, right? What can we do to keep that cow as a cow and right. You know, reduce some of the interventions that we make on these cows?
Yeah. Well, if you think like the calving episode for the animals is already like such a stressful event. And if we keep locking and trying to make them moving around the pen and chasing cows, you are just increasing even more the stress that they are going through, and you can even start a new, disorder there or any metabolic issues by the stress that we cause.
There was one of the dairies I visited in China. I really like their approach. You know, we often hear that. Maybe from the consumer or animal welfare side that, you know, a cow perhaps only has 3 lactations. And they had a visitor center, and it said, these are the 5 golden years. And it started with the calf and through heifer rearing and then the cow's lactation. And I like the way the spin they put on that is, instead of, you know, saying, wow, gee, a cow only lasts for perhaps 5 years or 3 lactations, they said these are the 5 golden years of a cow's life, and really put it in a nice perspective of, you know, the calf in a nice hutch with lots of bedding and so forth. So I think, again, as we think through this, like you said, all these aspects of animal welfare, comfort that then lead to a great transition, high rumination rates and low disease. And then we can, you know, talk about the high fertility cycle and repeating that with getting pregnant quick and then lactating again. And then maybe having 6 golden years.
Well, that's the goal. Yeah, I was reading, I don't remember now from who, but an article talking about lactation or ages in an animal. And you know, basically they were defending the aspects that we should also focus in the long term and how many lactations, or how can we improve the number of lactations, the average lactations, number of lactations for our animals too.
Yeah, I know the Discover Conference, you know, obviously really focused on that. So, you know, for those who are interested more in that discussion, some controversy there too, or debate between the economics of longer versus shorter lactations, but some really good presentations and food for thought as we think through those aspects.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Xylete, an Avel product for management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Evonik Animal Nutrition. We're sciencing the global food challenge.
Berg & Schmidt, your partner for improving animal performance. DSM Firmenich, mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed. It's time for our famous three. Our Yeast 40 is a natural biotechnology from ICC, designed to boost the health and productivity of animals under challenging production systems. Our Yeast 40 performance is supported by an unique processing technology that results in a pure product containing high levels of beta-glucans, MOS, and yeast metabolites. These factors, combined, promote the ruminal and intestinal modulation, helping the animals to reach their full potential.
So, Kynan, I guess as we wrap up here, the three famous questions on the Dairy Podcast Show, but you know, what's a reference that for you, a go-to in terms of dairy? That could be, you know, popular press or something more of a publication or text, website. You know, what are some of the resources that you think would be valuable to the listeners to dig into?
Well, me personally, I always go to Journal of Dairy Science as my first go-to. And I try read my wife's family. They do have the Daily Star Journal newspaper too, so that also always have a good point and good discussion too. So those are my two go-to for in terms of dairy.
Okay. So a mix of more of the research and professional publication, and then some of the lay publication to, I think that's really important to, you know, what are our producers seeing, what are they reading, and maybe help filter through some of that. Is it actually accurate, right? Because there's plenty of stuff out there you need to filter.
And there has been many times that we have one idea for about anything, something in the research aspect, but when you go talk to farmers, the history is different or change. And especially with Luciano, a lot of our research questions start with the farmer. So we try to always keep this mixing in the research side of the things and also seeing what is they actually paying from the farmers or what they really need from us.
That's a great comment, Kynan. You know, the ability to take the data, take the information and research and the logistics of applying that, right? And you know, for the advisor consultant is knowing the dairy and you know, a lot of that has to work through people and training, but there's lots of good information out there, but how do you actually apply it? And is it relevant? Because, you know, many times producers will say, gee, if I implemented all the recommendations, I'd be making, you know, 130 pounds of milk average, you know, all of these technologies bring another pound or something. And obviously they're not all cumulative. So,
right. Yeah. And I think, well, we as a scientist research, we should, I guess help the farmers to interpret those informations to, not everything that we find means that actually is going to happen in our farm. So we have like, you know, like we have the effect or what is the effect of X on Y, but you also have the confidence intervals or what is the actual estimate for that or what our power. So I think we should try to translate our research in a better words in a better way to farmers.
No, absolutely, and I you know, really appreciate those researchers who have a very practical aspect, such as in your group, of being able to convey that message to the producers, and then also work through the logistics of okay, can we implement this or not? And I always respect the groups and the researchers that can take that science, physiology, and okay, now how do we apply it at the dairy level? Because that's not always easy to do.
Yeah, I agree.
So you mentioned you just recently married, so maybe not lots of time for non-dairy related reading and so forth, but and anything recently, a documentary book or anything you'd recommend to the listeners?
Well, I haven't reading that much other than dairy papers. I'm prepared for my preliminary exam, so I have been studying more. But in the non-dairy aspect, I have been watching Heartland, I like, just because of the farm scenario and that happens in the farm. So yeah, that's what I have been doing when I'm not working on war or reading paper, is just watching Heartland.
Excellent. And then, Kynan, from your experience with your graduate work, working with producers, what do you think separates apart the progressive producer that's going to maintain their place in the industry for years to come?
That's a really good question. I think we have to have a broader perspective in terms of the dairy. So, of course, the term sustainable is being everywhere nowadays, so I don't want to go much deeper in that. But I think we have to think our aspects on our farm, like how can we be implement regenerative practice that is going to lead to a better soil or health for our soil, and how can we keep our dairy sustainable in the long run. So you can get some advantage by not having those practices right now, but if you don't start right now, maybe your future generation is not going to see, or is not going to have the chance that you are having right now to farm.
Yeah, no, that's a great comment. That you got to maintain being progressive. I look back at some of the dairies that I worked with, in Northern New York when I started out, and those that are still there, still farming, and those that aren't, and the transition of being progressive, implementing new things, continue to do what works, and maintaining relevancy in the industry.
Yeah, and sometimes especially for more conservative farms, I would say it's not as easy to be open for new ideas. But I think it's very important. Like our research doesn't stop. So we have new things coming on every day. We have new cool things and things that we could implement, and it would be benefit in the long run for the farm.
Excellent comment there that you don't have to be the early adopter or the initial adopter, but you got to be the adopter at some point, right?
Right. Yeah.
You can't not do it, or you will not be relevant in the industry.
And maybe it can be some geography thing too that might not work in our farm. So we have to be attempt for those things too. I think it's a good point you said that you don't need to be the early adapt, but okay, if in my neighbor's farms are working, so they have been doing that, why not they can be open for someone of new tries?
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Certainly, sometimes even the data is not convincing, but, what's the neighbor doing is the convincing argument. So, Dr. Kynan, I'm not pronouncing your name like a Brazilian. I can say Florentino or Spanish, but Florentino.
Yeah, that's good.
Good. Okay. Kynan Florentino. Pleasure to visit with you, especially, catch up given some of the collaborative work we're doing, sharing that with the audience here, and look forward to your research to come. I know there's some really cool projects that you're working on in your group that we're collaborating on, and some data here that we're planning to present at World Bariatrics in Mexico. Coming up in 2024, and again, hopefully some practical information that we could implement on the dairy you know, something you can actually do tomorrow to make a difference on your dairy.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Mark, and thanks for the opportunity to collaborate with you. It's been a learning process for me, but it's been very interesting to see our results and how everything is coming along. And like I said, hopefully pretty soon we're going to have new cool stuff for people to start to implement tomorrow.
Yes, yeah, we look forward to that. Excellent. Well, for all our listeners, thanks for joining. Whatever time of day it may be for you. Signing off here, thanks to Brandon Clarentino, Mark Thomas from Dairy Health and the Dairy Podcast Show. Have a great day.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time-consuming and requires technical know-how. But don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at the helm, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business.